Yeah, is that cool?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Couch Unplugged. Here with Danielle, myself, and Ryan's going to be hosting for us tonight because we've got a lot of Serie A stuff to get into, so I'm going to hand it over.
All right. First of all, I want to say AC Milan actually pants Lazio today, which means we get another Milan derby, our fourth one of the year, and I'm very excited. Danielle, how do you feel about playing AC Milan?
No comment.
Oh, come on. You got to give me something.
I eat crow every single week when Roma gets trashed. You got to take this one and expand.
Okay. How do I feel about having four Milan derbies this year? I'm kind of excited but nervous, but if Inter are able to get over their mishap from losing 2-1 to them over the weekend and really get and hopefully in Bastoni and all of our players should be back at 100%. All of our squad members should be back at full fitness. We should have no issues, but Milan, based on what they did against Lazio, they're still not a team to be underestimated. They can still pull off huge accomplishments when they put their minds to it. But overall, I'm excited. A lot of, obviously, in wrestling, we would say with what happened this weekend, they have a receipt coming. Just warning, karma's a bitch.
Elliot, speaking of AC Milan, Oliver Giroud, 4 goals in his last 2 games.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about these is the goals he's scoring, if you look at the minutes between the goals, he's scoring, and then he's scoring again within rapid succession. Inter had that 1-0 lead almost, I think, to the 70th minute. He scores 73rd, 75th, and pants Inter, you know, in their own stadium in a big statement. Beating Inter is always big because of the rivalry, but also the relevancy of the table. Inter now only have 1 point in front of them with a game in hand that they'll probably win, but they're putting pressure at the top, and then they take that momentum, and usually an AC Milan team will close down and collapse following a big victory. That didn't happen in this case. Chiro Immobile FC came to Milan and they ripped them apart. I say that because, you know, when Chiro is unable to be Superman, they don't play well. And AC Milan and Giroud especially had stepped up to the plate and swung another one out of the park. That's 2 massive victories in a row. And again, they don't have the team to win the league, but they can make things interesting if they keep this momentum going.
Yeah, all right. I'm going to make you eat crow now, Elliot. You lost. Inter won. You said they had a chance to win it, and I know you're a fan, and every fan's supposed to have faith.
Yeah.
But did you really believe, surely, did you really believe that the Inter had a chance to do it?
No, I thought we were going to lose. I thought we were going to. Reason I thought we maybe had a chance is they had just lost to Milan a few days earlier. And when we played the first time, we were without 3 starters. And my thing was, at full strength, we can give them a game, because Inter struggled in their previous game against, I don't remember who it was, but nobody that really scares you. And forcing to go to extra time, and Alexis Sanchez comes to the rescue. And then yesterday, it's like the problems of the previous game against Genoa just a few days earlier just reassessed itself. And all these baby Roma fans complaining about the referee in the game against Genoa, last night's performance just proved that you look ridiculous, because you can say what you want about that situation. Zaniolo's goal should have stood, but had we won that game, we would not have deserved it even a little bit, because they outplayed us almost the whole entire 90 minutes, especially maybe there's a few sequences where we looked strong coming on, but we were outplayed in that game. And our big issue is shots on target. We have to be putting ourselves in position to score goals. Last night, we have 1 shot on target the whole game, and the 1 chance we had should have been put away. Zaniolo had a shot on Handanovic, makes a save, and needed to put away the follow-up and didn't. if he's able to do that, I think the outlook of the game is different. Inter Milan are the better team. Their second team would finish in the top three in the league. They have a surplus of options, and the few key players did not come on until very late in the game. I think Martinez and Hakan Çalhanoğlu both came on with very little time left when the game was already decided. And then obviously Dzeko scores, which is weird for me still. And then Alexis Sanchez puts home the winner. It wasn't a good performance, but I'm much more agitated and frustrated with the game on Saturday than the one yesterday. Yesterday, you could expect it. This is the best team in the league. Determined coming off a big loss. And, you know, what they did is they had moments. So for the first 15, 20 minutes, they were outstanding. They got the goal. They just sat on it. And then they scored a screamer at the end. This is unfortunate. I wanted the Coppa Italia. But now we're going to have to ask for some favors from the boys in red.
Danielle, were you pleased with the victory?
Yes, I was pleased with the victory. I watched this match from start to finish. Obviously, Inter were definitely the stronger side in this one. We had, I think it was 8 shots on target. 2 of them went in. A couple of them were really close, though. But I mean, this Inter team has a nice bench to rely on. Obviously, we won't get to see some of our newest signings until the end of February. But still, no matter, we have a great depth on our bench right now, which is huge. Because that was one thing back when I started in being an Inter supporter and a football fan. It was just the depth was not there. But now we have a couple of different options in each area, such as midfield, defense, etc. And so we did what we needed to do. We got over that loss on Saturday and just came out and won this one, and I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, obviously very disappointing for Roma on yesterday, but let's talk about, and you need to bring this up. Let's talk about your disappointment on Saturday.
Me or Danielle? Sorry.
Danielle. Me, right?
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Inter, you had one job that day. Come on. But I mean, yes. There was a lot of things that we could have done better. I mean, the Olivier Giroud goals back to back within a span of like 4 minutes. Obviously, there was a lot of defensive mistakes on those parts, but I mean, and then of course, you had some substitution issues that were a problem. But overall, I mean, if things had gone differently, obviously we would have gotten the win, but in this situation there was just a lot of key mistakes within a short period of time that saw Milan get the victory, especially towards the end when after they went 2-1 up, they just played more of a defensive role and made sure that any counterattacks that Inter mounted didn't succeed. So it was a tough loss to take, but hopefully we get over this and really focus on getting back into form, and that should be no problem for Inter at this point.
All right. Elliot, how did you take the loss, AC Milan's win?
Okay, so I like what Danielle says there. I think it's a little misguided just because you're right in a lot of aspects, but the thing is, it wasn't – you know, and I know you've had your issues with Handanovic, and he's not at his best anymore, although it's more the defensive structure building into those chances by Giroud, who scores those goals, wins the game. But that's not what they lost. You can say they collapsed because of defensive errors. You can say Handanovic should have been better. They lost because they could not finish in front of goal. If you look back prior to that, I think maybe 5-10 minutes earlier, you know, Barella had a great chance. Lautaro had a great chance. There were so many chances for Inter in this game for them to not. And again, we have worse problems in front of goal, but for an Inter Milan team,
that's about to say.
Yes, I'm not saying this is our biggest issue right now, but in the magnitude of that game, in those moments. This is why it's so important, especially in big games. And that's why certain situations can be dictated by chances. And there were three or four chances in the 20 minutes prior to them kind of falling apart. You got to put the chances away, especially in a game you have a narrow lead, 1-0, and an AC Milan team that desperately wants to win this derby again. And it's been a long time. I think I'm not sure, but Inter were winning this derby when Icardi was up front for them, before Conte. So and before Spalletti was the last time. So maybe years prior to that. So they hadn't won every game, but they hadn't lost to AC Milan in ages. And they're motivated. They're having a great season. And to let it fall apart so quickly is, I think, disheartening. Watching this game from a neutral viewer, I was kind of hoping AC Milan would win, but you know, if Inter had won, it wouldn't have, you know, bothered me that much. But based on how everything involved, and again, she's right. Defensive mistakes there were defensive mistakes in this game. Handanovic probably could have done better on one of them, not both. But then it's sort of not finishing the chances when they were right there for you. And I think you get one more goal. Maybe they should have been a tad more aggressive earlier when they had the lead instead of sitting on it. And I think in the end, that's kind of what tipped the game. But as a neutral point of view, this is exactly what we want. We want competitiveness in this derby. And now we're going to see it two more times. And Inter are the better team. But if you go into those two games, I'm not sure there's a significant favorite because it's removed from Serie A. In this cup that we're going to see in a little bit, It could go either way. And that's why the importance of AC Milan's victory is really highlighted now, because now they're going to have to play each other twice.
All right, very good. Elliot, I'm going to start with you on this question, and then we'll go to Danielle. Cagliari really did Juventus and Lazio a favor this weekend.
Yeah. You know, you look at Atalanta, and I like Atalanta, and it's a weird one because Razvan Marmar plays for Cagliari, my Romanian brother. So I want them to do well, but I also want Atalanta to keep Juventus off their step, especially after watching their game prior to that. But they did him a huge favor. Atalanta, I was getting so irritated because you look at how many with the exclusion of Gosens, but they replaced him with Boga. They get rid of these pieces, but Gasperini just has a way of rebuilding squads and making them extremely dangerous. And this Atalanta team is extremely dangerous at their best. They can score on anyone. The problem was, in that game, Cagliari looked like the better team throughout. Maybe they didn't have the same amount of chances, but they were the ones pressurizing them constantly, and everything was kind of flowing through them to get that goal. Then Gasperini brings on Zapata, and this part was unfortunate. He doesn't score the goal, but he's the reason the goal was scored. Then he gets in. Then he gets knocked up a few minutes later. He has to come out, and then Cagliari just take advantage and get. They're in a relegation fight. They were up for this. They were the better team. Gasperini's substitutions were terrible. Mario Pasalic is one of the only players in that entire 11. That was playing well in the midfield, and he takes him off. And I just don't understand the logic, because he was kind of keeping things semi together. And the second that's made, Cagliari take advantage, they get points. They're a little further from the drop. And meanwhile, it opens the gates for Juventus to then jump in and take, you know, their top four spot.
All right, Danielle, what do you think of the feat of Atalanta?
Unfortunately, I did not watch this match, although that I did watch six matches in a row, which is weird for me over a weekend. But, yeah, it's just unfortunate that some mistakes happened in this match. Zapata ended up getting that equalizer after Cagliari had gone one up. And then after Zapata came off, things just started to collapse after. And Cagliari took advantage of those like opportunities that were given to them. Now it's going to be imperative that they kind of like regroup and get back into like the winning mentality, because obviously both Juventus and Atalanta are fighting for the spot in the Champions League. So we'll see what happens. But at this point, Juventus overtook them based on the result earlier.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of Juventus, I want to go through this match. How good did their signings look?
We're in trouble.
Verona.
We're in trouble. We're all in trouble. Roma's not in trouble because they're not in a title race. But all the teams that are looking good right now are in trouble. This is why there's so much pressure. Look, if you look at what Inter needs to do, if they don't sign Raspadori, Scamacca, or both in the summer, Juventus are going to take this league back. And as much as I don't like Inter, and I don't think we're ever going to have a time where it's going to be five titles in a row or anything like that. But they're so good. This was the best match of football they played all season. Verona's a tough side. Nobody likes to play Verona. Juventus made it look – again, Verona played well, but Juventus made it look simple. Dybala's pass to Vladovic out of the gate, scores his opening goal. Boom. It's 1-0 for Juventus. Then in the second half, Dennis Zakaria from Gladbach just arrived. He scores the second goal. Both of their signings score. They were flawless. Dybala was taking everybody on. It was just – it just looks like a team that is – not indestructible, but if you let Juventus get a real better coach, a coach that's ready to take on this challenge, we're all going to be in trouble because they have everything across the board. They look so flawless, and Federico Chiesa is injured. Now imagine him in a front three with Dybala and Vladovic. It's scary, man. They looked so good that I'm feeling a danger for all of my other friends who support these clubs who are trying to win. They were just top to bottom incredible. And remember, Verona's no pushover. They're a very strong team. And Juventus just didn't have much trouble at all. And that's what's scary.
Danielle, did you get a chance to watch this match?
Oh, hell yeah, I did.
What
did you say? I share Elliot's sentiment. Everybody should be scared. And if, like Elliot said, if we don't sign Raspadori and Scamacca or Scamacca or even both during the summer, we're looking at a whole different picture. You're going to need to have either one or both of them join Inter in the summer. So that way it ends up being a fairly close race throughout next season. Because there are a lot of clubs out there who are wishing they could upgrade to the status of us, but obviously they're going to get nowhere close due to the financial fair play situation. But other teams who wish they could beat, like teams like Juventus, it's going to be very difficult because they cut through. Obviously, Verona, like Elliot just stated perfectly, they're a good team. But they cut through them like butter. Dybala was taking, as Elliot said, taking everybody on. Vlahovic and but they got those goals in the back of the net with pure perfection. So, yeah, with all these, your teams upgrading, everybody else should be put on notice.
And you have to look at the fact that McKinney and Locatelli did not start the game and came off the bench. Locatelli didn't play, but McKinney came on late, which is one of their better midfielders this season. So the fact that they have that already instituted, set up for themselves. And the difference is Inter is the best team in the league. But if you look at all their options, they got a lot of youth, youngish players. But they also have a lot of guys who are on the back nine, as they say. Juventus' team is super young. So it's like Inter need to somewhat circulate some young signings to kind of change that. And it's not just for Inter. It's for the other teams. AC Milan is a few steps away. And if I'm Paolo Maldini seeing how well Juventus played, I need to go big. And there's a certain Roman striker playing for a team that he is – almost above the level of the entire squad. If I'm AC Milan, I would go gung-ho for Kira Mobley. Just see what they want and then pay double it. Because, and I know this is kind of like something, it probably won't happen, but they need to try. Because Inter needs to do the Raspadori thing. Somebody, one of these other teams needs to get a big signing in too. Because what's going to happen is, if Inter get one of them, but not both, and Juventus upgrade again, we're going to be in trouble. One of these teams needs to look around the league and find a player that can help them immediately. And Napoli needs to do the same because they're losing Lorenzo Insigne. So they're going to dip next season if they don't reply. So watching that, and it is one game, but it's against one of the better teams in this league, at least over the last couple of years, an underrated side that plays really good football. So this is if they continue to play this, we're going to see a chain reaction from all the other teams that want to win. Because if we don't act correctly, Juventus are going to retake the lead again. And we don't want them again. They're going to eventually win the league again with this team, but we want to delay that as much as possible because I don't need them to get going and get confident again, because that's a bad news for everyone.
All right. Semi-important match. Well, it's for Sampdoria. They put a pounding on us to swallow 4-1 this weekend.
Yeah. This was rough. I didn't get a chance to see the game start to finish, but Sampdoria is not having a great season. They're struggling as well. Sassuolo is a good team that has good players, but they're also collapsing at the bits. But to see Sampdoria do them like that, I think it's a big statement that we're going to do everything we can to survive the season, and while pushing down the boys in green and white, because that's brutal. If you said, okay, a Sampdoria won 3-2, that sounds realistic. Even like a 2-1, because the quality of the teams are not too different. But for them to make a big statement like that, I think it doesn't so much say that Sampdoria is the greatest team ever. It somewhat says that Sassuolo's going to be in trouble if they don't get themselves in gear, because that's the one takeaway I have from that, at least from the score result.
All right, very good. Danielle, did you get a chance to see the match?
This one, no.
All right. Fair enough. Elliot, and let's see. Let me go through my script and computer.
Danielle watched a few relegation tied matches that I didn't get to see. So actually, I'd love to.
What match did you watch?
Yeah, I just love to hear her perspective on those two, because I didn't watch the Empoli game or the, I don't know what other game you watched, but those, the two relegation clingers.
Yeah, Sally Arcina.
Yeah, which one are we doing first?
The Empoli.
Oh my gosh. That match, it was, I think, at the time, 12th and 13th place teams before everything was settled. I think one of them dropped in the table to like 14th, but that match, yes, it ended up in a 0-0 draw, but it was very exciting. Both of these teams were really going at each other's throats. They were both creating great opportunities, but they just had a hard time finishing those. But in essence, it was also mostly a defensive match because of how they were able to like stop the opponent's counterattack with ease. But I mean, it was just exciting to see these two teams go at each other. And I mean, I usually 0-0 draws, some of them are like kind of boring, but this one was exciting to watch from start to finish. Especially with how they maintained the intensity and everything. It was just very well done by both teams.
So considering the fact that it was a 0-0 draw, between the two teams, who do you think would feel more disappointed for not getting a result? I know you said it was close, and I know you said it was a masterclass from both. But if you could say which of the two teams should feel more disappointed for not collecting more points this weekend?
I think based on their experience in the top flight, I think Bologna should be the one team that should be disappointing from not getting a result from this one, because of them being the veterans in this league, whereas Empoli has yo-yoed between both Serie A and Serie B for over the past like few years. So I think Bologna being the veteran should feel kind of disappointing that they didn't get something from this match.
And what's the other one you saw? The Salernitana versus Fabia. I don't know.
Now,
so go ahead.
That, now that one was a goldfest a little bit. It was like there was so much drama. It was like, give me the popcorn and remove your hands quickly. First, I'm trying to remember who went up first. Salernitana had a great goal from a direct free kick into the like the left portion of the goal, and so it was very well done. But then not even a few minutes later, Spezia get a penalty, which was converted. Then you had Salernitana get a penalty given to them from a rough tackle that was given. So then they go up 2-1 again. And then I think it was another penalty for Salernitana.
Jesus.
And yeah, or it was like a corner or something, and that was converted. But this match ended 2-2. And all this pretty much took place in the first half. At that point, both of the teams in the second half were like, they decided to keep going. But in the second half, a lot of the chances kind of like fizzled out. And there wasn't as much aggressiveness. So this match ended in a 2-2 draw. But in the end, it was a very crazy match from start to finish. And for those of you who didn't watch it, you need to go watch it because it was really good.
I didn't watch it, to be honest with you, but that's awesome. Sounds like it was a great game.
It was. I'm excited. I can't believe I watched this match.
All right. Anything really other surprising this week? I mean, you had Torino lose to Udinese.
Nah, that's expected. Torino's a really strong side this season.
Yeah. No, they lost.
Oh, they lost to Udinese?
2-0.
Oh, that's rough. Sorry, my bad. You know, that's a rough result then, because Torino's been one of those sides that could make Europe this season. Udinese has been hit or miss. They do struggle without DePaul this season. They lost their goalkeeper. I think that's a big win for them. Hopefully, not really going to be threatened by relegation, but want to improve on their season. I think that's a big win because Torino's been fantastic so far this year.
Yeah, what's for the change for Torino? All they've been doing is struggling in the relegation zone for the past however many years.
Yeah, so what happened was Verona, who we all respect, who's been amazing ever since they got promoted. When they their first year from promotion, they finished ninth. I call that the greatest newly promoted side ever at the time. I don't know if I still agree with that, but you look at all that stuff. The reason all that was happening is because Ivan Juric was patrolling the ship and doing so. He leaves Verona, who's in a good place, to go to a Torino team that's been brutal the last couple of years, and all of a sudden they look fantastic again. They look like a team that we all can be proud of. Again, we all loved when we talked about the Granit Torino thing from a couple of years ago when we did that episode, and we all want to see Torino thriving because they're a huge club and people just don't realize it. So to see them even in flirting with the possibility of Europe is amazing. And do they have some good players? Yes, they do. They got some defenders that are really strong. Their midfield's pretty good, and they're good. No, nobody's amazing, but very, very good. And then all they did is put this new coach comes in there and changes the entire environment. And now all of a sudden, Torino's a real team again, which is very exciting, at least for me.
Yeah. Can Torino make Europe?
Yes. The Europa League will be tough. Conference League, definitely. Because I think they have a really good chance here. Lazio, Lazio is an interesting one. Because if Immobile was not a part of Lazio, I think Torino would be where they are. It's just they have a superstar up top, and that's what makes them continue to push. But I would not second guess them because they really do have a chance to potentially make the Europa League. I think they have a really good chance to make the Conference League. They just surprised me. I thought this was ridiculous that he went from Verona to Torino, but it's really worked, and they're a really strong team.
Yeah. Danielle, what do you think? Are you excited to see Torino doing so well this year?
Yeah, definitely, especially since seeing them, like, struggle over the past, like, 2 to 3 years. But see them getting, like, back into a spot where they could be contending for a spot in the UEFA Conference League is very nice to see, especially since they have been struggling for that so long. And I'm just going to say one word, damn, because I just realized that we started at the end of, I think it was next, sometime at the end of March, 2 years ago, we started our podcast journey together.
Yeah.
Damn, where did the time go?
All right. Well, I know that was a shorter episode, but that's really all I have in the script this week.
I got a few things.
All right.
I think, hold on, just let me check my notes. But I just want to do this, and Danielle, we'll play our little game and see if you do any better. This week, let's see, Lazio beats Fiorentina. Without Vladovic, Fiorentina just doesn't look as killing it as they were in the past. Let's look at let's just quickly look at the table. Let's see how the Champions League race is looking and see if you guys have any comments about it. As it stands, Champions League places would be occupied by Inter, Napoli, Milan, Juventus. Atalanta's 2 points behind in fifth. Lazio and Roma are in 39 points, while Atalanta's at 43 in fifth. So 6th, 7th are the two Rome clubs. Fiorentina, Verona, and Torino will all be fighting for that Conference League spot. So any thoughts about all that or whatever?
I think your top four is all going to stay the same, personally. I don't know if you agree with that or not. And no, I think Roma sneak into the Europa League somehow.
I hope so. I think Juventus took Atalanta's spot, and I don't think they're giving it back. Daniel,
do I think they're not giving it back, I think you can put it in the book.
Yeah, I think it's done. I think these are the four. I don't really see Atalanta get, unless something again, it's only 2 points, but I just, based on how they played, I just don't see it. I really don't see a way that back. Atalanta kind of lost the ball this week, and I don't think they realized the ramifications of that game. I think we'll soon find out. Danielle, what are your thoughts on the top four so far?
I mean, I think it's going to also stay the same to an extent, unless somehow by a miracle Atalanta are able to retake that spot from Juventus. But based on how Juventus look now with
Vladovic and Zacharia.
Vladovic and Zacharia, it's going to be difficult. So I think the top four will stay as it stands.
I agree with guys. I actually think Juventus will come in second. Inter will still win it. I think Juventus will come in second, and then AC Milan and Napoli. I think that will be the order. But, you know, we'll see what happens. But I do think, based on the performance, and there's enough ground to make up for Juventus to finish in the top two, which would be a big would be great this season. And then Milan, I think, are a bit better than Napoli. Milan's a good team. They're just missing a few pieces. Napoli is a good team that never plays well. And I know I don't like Napoli, but if you watch Napoli play this season, most of the time they win, they play like crap but win. And when they lose, they really look bad. So it's a team that has good players but never plays well. It's a really strange thing for me. And again, Napoli fans will probably hate that I said that, but it's just the way they've looked this season. They've looked good a few times this season. For the most part, when they're winning their games, they're doing it, again, in an ugly way, but they don't look good. Their performances aren't like, oh, that was great, when they do end up, when they're winning the game. So I think that's something I would be concerned about if I'm a Napoli fan. Milan and Napoli, I think it's going to be between those two for third. But I do think that Milan will just get them because Giroud's in good form and they're playing well. And once they get some pieces back, they'll be flying. All right, at relegation zone, we got Salernitana. I think they're probably gone. with 11 points, Genoa with 14, Venezia with 18, Cagliari with 20, Sampdoria with 23, and Udinese and Spezia, Bologna, and Sassuolo with 26, 27, 8. What are your thoughts on where the relegation is now, and just any thoughts you have whatsoever is fine.
I think it will stand unless something really dramatic happens to Cagliari where they end up in that like zone. But I think at this point it would stand.
Who's at 18th?
18th is Venezia. They have 18 points. Cagliari just in front of them with 20, and Sampdoria has 23. Spezia has 26.
I think Sampdoria drops. I think they finish at 18th.
All right.
I don't know why. I just have a gut feeling. It's been coming for, and I know I complimented him, but this has been a long time coming. And it's going to happen eventually. And I think this is the year it actually does.
Yeah. To me, and Daniel, you've heard me say this about a million times. I don't want a Serie A with Genoa and Sampdoria either in or out together. They're either in the league both or out both. So part of me just wants Genoa. It has 14 points. They have to get up to 20 to get themselves out of the situation. As good as they played on Saturday against Roma, I don't see a scenario where they can propel themselves out of the relegation zone. So because of that, part of me is hoping, for two reasons, that Sampdoria sinks into the relegation zone, which frees up Mikael Damsgaard and probably makes him cheaper for Roma to go get. But also, this is one of the best rivalries in Europe. It's passionate. It's electric. It's everything. The Sampdoria and Genoa rivalry is top class. So because of that, I don't want to see – and Ryan, you know this. Aston Villa, Birmingham City played like what, a couple times in the last 10 years? I don't want that in Italy. So with all due respect, unless Genoa gets their acting gear, I want them both in or both gone, because there's it's such a magical derby. It would just be shameful for us not to have to see it for several years.
Yeah, I mean, when Aston Villa got relegated, that was the only positive. But, I mean, they met for only like one time in 15 years the year they got relegated, and it was in the FA Cup tie.
Yeah, and then they spent like 2 years in the championship. So that's like five meetings in, you know, so many years. And again, Genoa and Sampdoria are big clubs with a lot of history. They would find the ways to come back. But I don't want to be sitting up here for a Serie A season next season with them not playing each other. So one way or another, I want them playing each other, because it's such a fascinating derby that a lot of people don't talk about. So because of that, I hope Sampdoria sinks a little. I think it's possible. I think Cagliari, if they've only lost one game in their last five. Sampdoria has one win in their last five. So those are really what it's between. And I do think that Cagliari does have the edge, and I think Sampdoria will probably sink. All right. Daniel, do you want to do the game now or our debate question now? It's up to you.
Okay, let's do the game.
All right. Ryan, you can participate as well. I'm just going to say a random player from somewhere in Serie A. Daniel's going to try to guess who they play for, and we'll see. And again, I'm offering you multiple choice and a clue. If you get it with nothing, Daniel, you get 5 points. If you get it with a clue, you get 3 points. If you get it with multiple choice, you get 1 point. So we're going to start up super easy, I hope. And I'll probably slide one in that we went through last week just to start yourself. All right. Musabaro, who does he play for?
Bologna.
All right. Danielle, I'm going to go Nico Gonzalez.
I'm going through all my teams in my head. I've heard that name before too, and it's pissing me off.
Yeah, because I mentioned him every week.
Exactly. That.
You want a clue or multiple choice, or you're just gonna try to figure it out another second?
Okay, just give me one clue.
All right, his team recently spent all their January transfer window buying strikers. This should be really easy.
God, that was the easiest clue too. And we just talked about them last week.
Think about clubs that got rid of star players.
Fiorentina?
Yeah, there you go. All right. Let's see. Who does Francesco Caputo play for?
No, it's not.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I can't answer this one because we literally were talking about him an hour ago.
Oh, crap. All right, Danielle, who does he play for?
Definitely not Bologna. Not Sampdoria. Not
Cagliari. Yeah. Sorry. You said it. I just couldn't let you. It's Sampdoria. All right. Who does God, let me think. I'm just trying to think now. Crap. I'm drawing blanks. Who does Luis Alberto play for?
No,
this is for Ryan.
Luis Alberto. Yeah, I'm looking for all teams. Here we are. Oh. So I'm going to go out on a limb here.
Yeah.
Because you're a Roma fan. I'm going to pick your rivals, Lazio.
Yeah, that's bang on. All right.
Really? Daniel,
yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got it.
Daniel, I'm going to give you – but this player's in the top six. I just want to get you familiar, and then I'll do one more to you, and then we'll move on to the question after this, okay? Who does Ishmael Benacer play for? Remember – he made your team of the season last season, so you should know who he plays for.
Rubentes.
No, that's not right.
Wait, Benacer?
Yeah. Algerian. Defensive midfield.
Because I know there's a Benacer in Juventus, too.
No, there's not.
Oh, wait. I'm getting names confused with... Oh. It's in the top six. Oh, yeah. AC Milan.
Yeah. Bang on. All right. We'll do one. Daniel, I'm going to give you one more.
Then I got a few for you, Elliot.
All right. All right. Sounds good. I'm trying to think. I'm just going to give you an easy one because I can't think of it. But it's an easy one, but a complicated one at the same time. Who does Felix Afina play for?
This should be an easy one, but it is a complicated one. Yes.
It's easy because it's on a team, one of the bigger teams, but he's only kind of just broken through this season. But he scored possibly the goal of the season earlier this year against Genoa.
So if it's in the top six, that eliminates a bunch of the teams.
Okay.
Let me figure it out.
Not Roma. What's the name again, Elliot? I couldn't hear you.
Felix Afina. It's a very new player.
Not Juventus. Not Roma. Not Lazio. Not Inter, obviously, because I know my own club.
I got it, Elliot.
Danielle.
Napoli.
No. He plays alongside another person that I always criticize for decision making. Who do I always say needs to make better decisions?
Atalanta?
No, sorry.
Zaniolo
is the one I'm talking about. Okay, go ahead.
Does he wear number 64 for AS Roma?
Yeah, he does.
Good, because I watched your game.
Okay, yeah. So,
all right, remember, now it's my turn.
Okay, let's go.
All right, where's Danny Welbeck currently playing?
Oh, shit. Everton?
Nope. I'll give you another one.
Hold on. Are they in the top part of the table or the bottom part of the table?
They're kind of like the mid table. Hang on. They're bottom. They're a bottom feeder.
All right. Not Norwich.
But this year they're in the top 10. But they've been a bottom feeder ever since they've come up, but this year they've made a surprising run into the top 10.
Brighton?
Yes!
Yeah, boy!
All right, it gets harder. I have like four for you. Danielle, right, you can guess too.
All right, let's go.
All right. Hang on. Alexander Mitrovic.
Oh, boy.
I'm guessing Wolverhampton.
No. And he's not in the Premier League either, but he is tearing it up right now.
Oh, Fulham.
Yep. You got it.
I wasn't sure because I thought maybe he made a move recently, but my head said Newcastle, but I remember he doesn't play for them anymore.
Yeah, thank God. All right. Shai Adams.
Oh, Southampton.
Man, this ain't fair.
I know my shit, man.
This is why some of these days I don't like this game.
I'm gonna have to give you. I'm gonna give you like a really obscure one now.
Give me a really hard one.
Okay. All right. I'm gonna give you a guy that I hate too. Elliot, where is Troy Deeney playing now?
Birmingham City.
Wow. All right. Dude, now I really got to get that.
Take really hard. Because, again, I know the basic players in the Premier League, but there are players that I've heard of that I don't know.
Okay.
That well.
Who does Alan Saint-Maximin play for?
Oh, come on, man. It's Newcastle.
I hate this game.
Try one. Just give me one more. But think really hard, and then we'll go to the debate question.
Can I give you, like, balls? Can I give you, like, League 2 Walsall? Or, like, what's the lowest league I could go?
Anywhere in Europe. But, I don't know any League 2 players, unless it's Akinfenwa. So anywhere in Europe, but just keep it in Europe.
Keep it in Europe. All right. Who does Ellis Sim play for?
Oh my!
It is on the British Isles. I'll give you that.
What's his name?
Ellis Sims.
Good God.
He's actually having a hell of a season, too, for his club.
Is it in the Premier League?
No.
It's
in the second biggest league in the United Kingdom.
So the Championship?
No, Scotland's part of the United Kingdom.
I'm gonna flop this one.
Celtic?
Hearts?
Oh, how did you know that?
Wait, what?
You got it right.
I just took a stab in the dark because I figured it wasn't going to be Celtic or Rangers. All right. That was fun. Right. I think I'm the king of this game. All right. So, guys, this is the debate question. And I'm because I want to avoid any easy answers to this. So, Daniel, remember the question about if we were a player? This is going to be similar to that, but not, but less difficult to answer. Okay, so you are a sporting director. Let me phrase this way. You cannot use any team that you are currently affiliated with, and you can't use you can use big teams, but not money explosion teams. So if you could be sporting director of any club in Europe, who would you be in? Either say why or what you would do if in that position, whatever you want. But again, no superstar money and nobody that you're affiliated with. So I can't say Wolfsburg and I can't say Roma. I can't say Minnesota United. Danielle, no Gladbach, no Inter, no Aston Villa. And then Ryan, no St. Louis and no Arsenal or Schalke.
All right. Because I do have mine.
I'll go last.
You want to hear mine?
Yeah, go ahead.
Are you ready to be interested?
Mine's really obscure, so yeah, I am.
Mine's from a league you don't think I'd care for. I'd actually want to be the sporting director of Marseille.
Wow, that's a good one.
And here's why, okay?
All right.
I want to get in there where you have enough development because – and my whole thing with Marseille is they're the biggest club in France. No offense to PSG. Marseille's won the European Cup. Marseille's been around longer. First of all, PSG and Marseille is one of the most criminally underrated derbies in the world. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, it's just become so one-sided lately. But at its peak, it was phenomenal.
And I would want to bring Marseille back to the top because with the amount of talent coming out of France now, I'd want to develop not only for the French national team, but be able to somehow keep the players in France without superstar money, but for the goal of winning to make the French league much better. Because let's be honest, the French league can be so much better than it is just because of the talent along with France.
Yeah, 100%. So how would you be like a youth system guy or would you buy cheap guy or would you? Like, how would you – I'm not saying to put your whole plan down, but how would you approach closing the gap? Like, what would be your strategy?
My strategy for closing the gap is to go out in, like, those obscure towns in France. Like, you know, France is known for its village. Do you know Arsene Wenger came from a place that didn't have electricity before he was born?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Like, seriously, like, some of the places – I would go out. I would do youth. And when I'm talking youth, I'm talking, like, 12, 13 – and get them signed up to the academy and build them up. And not only would I be going to France, Africa is becoming such a footballing hotbed right now. I definitely go there. I'd stay away from England, stay away. And not only Africa, but also the amount of criminal underuse that Mexican players get in the European leagues disgusts me. So I would go a lot more international. I definitely really focus heavy on Africa, heavy on Mexico, you know. Some of the places that aren't used as much in the European leagues and get the talent and build it up.
Would you? Okay. So if in this situation, if you could make one signing that would be realistic for Marseille, this would be like your, basically the one big signing. What who would you bring in?
You know, now this guy hasn't done what he was supposed to at the Premier League, but when he was in the French league, he teared up. He is from. I bet you know who I'm going for.
Yeah, Timo Werner.
No, actually.
Oh, really? Who?
Yeah, I'm bringing Alex Lacazette back home.
Oh, that'd be a good one. All right, Danielle, what club? What club are you now in charge of?
Sunderland.
And what would be your wait?
That's cheat. That's cheating.
That's emotional connection.
Okay. Let me see.
If you need some time to think, I can go.
Go ahead.
All right. So I thought between two. In Germany here, currently not in the best place. I'm actually going to go with Hertha Berlin. I thought of Arminia Bielefeld, but I'd be Hertha Berlin would be sort of what I would do is I would. Again, kind of like you, scout a lot of young players, build a really strong academy, and then go after players in countries, obscure countries that I have a great deal of knowledge in. So I would go a lot in Romania because I am very familiar with the league. I'm very familiar with the talent that's there. And there are several players in the national team and in the young ranks that could thrive in a Bundesliga. I wouldn't make any huge buys. I would buy cheap. I would buy from neighboring Bundesliga teams that are at a similar level and slowly, surely build up the academy and thrive there. And then again, my dream signing would be Florian Wirtz, but I know that I'm not going to have the funds to pull that off. So if I could make one, landmark signing, I would go with Mikkel Damsgaard. He would not be cheap from Sampdoria. He wouldn't be super cheap, but he wouldn't be super expensive. And I could get him done on a cheap deal. Remember, he was phenomenal at the Euros. He doesn't really have the same energy sometimes as Sampdoria. And I would surround the team with pieces that he would work with well with, and slowly we'd climb the Bundesliga table. That would be my goal. And again, a lot of Romania, I'd take some MLS players even that are ready for the next step and try to build slowly, but also I don't want to move fast. I want to move correctly. So make the right signings that work well with each other. All right, Danielle, you're going to kick us off. Kick us out.
If I was going to kick people out, I would just end the thing right now. I have to be nice and answer. But I would say Portsmouth, actually. Stay in the EFL League One. Portsmouth is a club that has had some, like, real bad strings of luck over the past few decades. So my goal would have first to work them up the EFL League One table. Because currently, if we're going based on this season alone, I think they're 12 or 13. So I would start by obviously building up that youth academy. Pretty much go similar avenues to what you guys are doing. Build up a strong youth academy and find those to those hotbeds, Africa, MLS, Mexico, and just really work on building a decent enough squad. I don't know what player I would go after, but I know that over time with working on getting that depth and those academies built up, it would set them up for the future. So I would go with Portsmouth.
So just one follow-up question here. Do you think loan deals from big from clubs in England would be an avenue you would go through? Temporary deals, one a year, but you could go get a young prospect from one of these bigger teams and play for Portsmouth.
Yeah, that would probably be a similar like methodology, just 1 year loan deals, and just see where things go from there. And obviously, when you get promoted, the higher you go, the more money sometimes you get. So I would just start with loan options and see where things go from there. And then just as things improve, then I would start going after more bigger game, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. The only reason I bring that up is because I'm in the Bundesliga. So even though the money, I don't have the most money, I would have, there'd be more of a recruitment thing.
You have the most talent.
Yeah. So you could get lower talent, but you know, Portsmouth, it's going to be difficult to probably get the talent that Ryan gets at Marseille and I get at Hertha Berlin. So I think loan deals is actually the best way to start build. And then once you get to the League One championship, then more players would likely, you can actually invest and get some decent players. But anyway, all right. All right, so this has been another installment of the Couch Unplugged, and thank you for listening, and we'll see you guys later.
Thank you very much.